Bible students, it is that time, and like Brother Tanner, I think all teachers have this experience. You feel really prepared for your first, three, maybe four classes, but that fifth class is kind of the wild card. You never know how much material you're going to have left, whether you're going to be doing your fastest conversation, or if you're going to be talking really slow and really Southern and really Texan to really drag the time out. So, hey, I lived in Texas for a long time. I understand there's, something that could be said in 15 seconds can take a couple minutes sometimes. All right. So a couple bookkeeping things as we get started. First, official information about our gathering. If you need to register, if you just go to the website, thedenverchristadelphians.com, there's a form you can fill out to register. Again, we would love to have anybody come out. We got homes, there are hotels. Please, we'd love to have as many familiar faces as possible. Again, September in Colorado, it has only snowed a couple times during the gathering. Usually it is a very beautiful time of year to come out and visit, so please do. Second point of kind of bookkeeping, I had several folks ask questions about where some of the resources came from for this material. I would say there is not one specific book that is referenced, and these are non-Christadelphian books, because I think most of us would assume, right, the Law of Moses, the Expositor series on Genesis and Exodus. There's a book, Deuteronomy for Disciples. There are several, and then, of course, obviously, we have access to lots and lots of exhortations these days. So this is maybe just books that you are not as familiar with or do not have as easy access to. So just for reference, we are going to, the first two are books that we've quoted from this week. The first one is Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. He is regarded as one of the premier philosophical Jews of the last 100 years, and he wrote one of his most well-known books, is a short booklet on the Sabbath. And as we've discussed this concept of sacred time, it's a pretty easy but heady read, and it was one I actually recommend just to think about the importance of setting aside sacred time, which we're going to talk about some today. Brad Young is a gentleman who trained under, did some rabbinical training. He is a Christian. He is a seminary professor. But this is his book, and we quoted from that some yesterday. The next three are pretty good audiobooks if you need something for your drive. Our Father Abraham has a lot of good historical information about the early division between Christianity and Judaism. And he's a gentleman who's interested in trying to improve essentially Jewish-Christian relations and essentially kind of undo many of the ills that Christianity has done to Judaism over the centuries. John Mark Comer is a more, he would say, probably more popular writer, much more easy to access. And he has two books, one, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which talks a little bit about our living in our society specifically, and then Practicing the Way, which is more specifically on discipleship, both of which are pretty easy reads and I think have lots of good, thoughtful insights. He's a pastor out in California. And then Lois Toberg, she has a series of books about the Jewish context of Jesus' life and his teachings, which I think are all quite insightful and helpful. But the two that we mainly looked at would be Sitting at the Feet of Rabbi Jesus, Walking the Dust. Dallas Willard is not a audiobook. It's a very, a little bit denser, philosophical, lengthy book that I'm currently working through right now. Commentaries, this is also, last times when we referenced Jewish commentaries, people say, well, I don't have a Jewish commentary. Where do I find Jewish commentaries? This is just a smattering of ones that I've used in the past. Of note, this statement, Chumash, is just another title for Torah. It is the title for Torah when it is in a book, not a scroll. So that is just, it's a Torah, stone edition, it's a commentary. And most Jewish options of the Torah and Tanakh will come with commentary to them if you find one. But the disclosure is, and you should do your research, because just like in Christianity, there are conservative and liberal scholars and interpretations. You also want to know what kind of, what the background with the biases of the commentary you're looking at. But that first one, the Son Sino Books of the Bible, is a very traditional commentary on the entire Old Testament. And then if you're more of an audio person, you like podcasts, these are a couple podcasts that do have some information for what we've talked about. Aleph Beta is a Jewish organization. They're read by a gentleman named Rabbi David Foreman, who has spent most of his life focusing on Torah study as opposed to Mishnah and Talmud instead. So their entire organization is about looking at the Torah. And so it does give some Jewish lens, some insights, and they have two podcasts that are fairly interesting listens. Ray Vanderland is a gentleman who is has some associations with Focus, Faith on the Family, Focus on the Family, Focus on the Family. And he also did graduate studies in Judaism, so he went through a good portion of rabbinic school, so he has some good insights on kind of the first century setting and some of the background for the world. And he has a whole series of DVDs that you can look at that do try to put the Bible in kind of historical and cultural context. One of his students runs something called the Bema podcast. It does not apply to the judgment seat. Instead, it applies to a title of the little dais that was in the center of the Sabbath or the synagogue that they taught from. And then the same gentleman, John Mark Palmer, does have a podcast where he just kind of talks about the contents of his book, Practicing the Way. So, again, if you're audio, if you're reading, and like all things, like all books, like all material, right, we're not advocating or espousing or saying all these things have truth or correct doctrine or correct understanding. All of them are going to have things that we would not agree with, but there's lots of, I think, benefit in some of these things, especially giving Jewish background and Jewish context. Now, to put a button and a bow on our class from yesterday, there's one point that we made at the end of class that I felt we kind of rushed through, and I would just like to revisit briefly. So let's turn back to Genesis 1, because this is one last little bit of clarification about the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And the question here is, when did God's creative acts end? So if I just ask you that question, not in the context of this class, because otherwise you're going to say, well, is this a trick question? But if you just said, when did God stop creating? We would all say, after day six. So let's see what the text says. Genesis 1, 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and earth were finished, and all the host of them. All right, God's done creating. End of the sixth day. Right? But then we read verse 2. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So then we would say, all right, God finished creating. He finished making the physical world in 6 days. And so the seventh day is a day of rest. But scripture oddly says that he rested. He finished his works and began to rest on the seventh day. So did he finish on the end of the sixth day, or did he finish on the seventh day? And again, Jewish commentators will say what God made his last creative act was creating rest. Creating the Sabbath was the last thing he made. Okay? And so that understanding goes into, and if, again, you look at Adam Clark, you look at some other Christian commentators, they'll say, hey, this shouldn't be seventh day. What it should really be is on the sixth day, God finished his works that he had done. And this is probably a mistranslation somewhere in history. But there's no scriptural or basis for that view. They just say this is in conflict and we should resolve it. Again, one of the things that you'll notice if you look at Jewish commentators a lot is they want to see where things seem to be off. Because for them, that's going to be, there's a point there. There's something for us to learn. There's something for us to dig into. If there's something that seems just slightly not in line, God's trying to tell us something in that. And so their point is here, this discrepancy is telling us there's something important about God setting aside rest for man. Okay? And so when we come to Matthew, you can argue that Jesus is using this concept. Okay? Because when we look again this statement, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath, or your translation may say is Lord and of the Sabbath. We looked at Psalm 8 yesterday that talked about the Son of Man being Lord of all of creation, the physical creation that God had made. This Genesis 2:2 then says, if the Sabbath was part of creation, he is over that as well. Okay. So we ran through that, we rushed through that, and I just thought we'd maybe break that down a little bit more visually, because I think that puts a little bit of a bow on what Jesus was saying. Now that we've gone through all that and we've spent a good 10 minutes of my time just not even getting to any material, now let's review so that we cover even more material. But if we think about what we've talked about and all the things we've covered in the last 4 days, this is going to be important because today our topic is, how does this all apply to us? Because yes, it's nice to have a nice academic understanding of what the Sabbath was, nice to know and have insights into Jewish, his teaching, his world. But at the end of the day, how does this help us in our service to God? How does this help us become better manifestations and reflections of his Son? So, ultimately, we have all these points, again, from the early on that the Sabbath was made as a time of fellowship, of unity, of worship, that God was looking to have a relationship with his creation, that ultimately it was to be forever. In the law, we saw that it was a significant punishment was attached to the Sabbath, but the reasons for that was because there was value for man physically and spiritually. And the importance spiritually were to reflect on his history and where he came from and the fallen relationship in the garden and what God was wanting to reestablish in the future, what the ultimate goal for creation was. It was also a reminder of their freedom from slavery, okay? To remind them, how did they treat the others of their society currently? It was also a testament to their allegiance. Again, think about the Sabbath and the guardrails on the golden calf. It was an idea of keeping this sign, keeping this token, was an indicator of where was your allegiance. Are you going to recognize that God has redeemed you? And when we come to the first century, there's lots of debate, there's lots of discussion. Jesus appears in a culture that is debating all these topics. And Jesus comes onto the scene and essentially says they need to reevaluate and reorient where their priorities are. Because they're putting emphasis on living and pretending they are in a perfect world. And Jesus says the more important thing is to essentially show the world that there is something better to come. To deal with those that are suffering, to deal with those that are struggling, and show them some small picture of the kingdom age in their lives, to provide them hope, to provide them encouragement, to show them something more is coming, and that ultimately, that the Sabbath, as a reminder, is not this oppressive thing that is supposed to control and dominate individuals' lives, but instead is to be a tool. It's to be something to encourage, to build up, to strengthen for the remainder of the week. So, how, in our day and age, are we going to use this tool? But before we get there, we're going to get to a couple other big questions. And the big questions that we have to ask are, first, are we bound currently to hold the law of the Sabbath? Now, we are all going to say no. That's going to be our answer that are here in this room. But do we know why we say no? Do we know why other strands of Christianity say yes? Or Are we like other strands of Christianity that we say, well, you know what's replaced the Sabbath is Sunday. That's the Lord's Day. So now the Sunday is really our Sabbath day, and we should treat it the same way, which is what some strands of Christianity say. The next thing we have to ask is, what is the benefit still of this concept of sacred time in our lives? What does it do for us now? Is it necessary for us now? Is it beneficial for us now? And if so, what does it look like? What does it look like in our spiritual walk to say we are setting aside sacred time? Well, let's talk about some of the defenses. So, and I want to start off with saying things that we should not use as defenses. And again, you may agree or disagree with these, but the first one we're going to say is that Sunday replaced the Sabbath day as the Lord's Day. Ultimately, we know from very early on, this first day of the week had significant meaning in Christianity. And later, once we get further on down the line, is going to be the concept that Sunday replaces Saturday. Okay, as a time of worship, as a time of Sabbath. And that is going to be something that ultimately is codified around the time of Constantine. And so some folks will say, you know, their argument for not keeping or holding to the Sabbath will be saying that ultimately that was a comment, that was a law made by Constantine. But we know that from a very early time, Christianity held this, the first day of the week important. What kind of got conflated at the time of Constantine was blending the two together. Until then, the first day of the week was important for Christianity, but the Sabbath was still its own entity. They were doing different things. And it's only later that they kind of became blended. The second common argument we talked about, the Lord, and again, you may not have agreed with our conclusions from yesterday that the Son of Man is applying to all of mankind and not Jesus. But if you say that that is not Jesus, Jesus is not claiming to be Lord of the Sabbath, you cannot use that as your claim to why we do not follow the Sabbath. And so our arguments are going to pin around that. Lots of our writings, by our, I mean Christadelphian body at large, is going to say, well, ultimately Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath and we follow our Lord. And since he's Lord of the Sabbath, we are no longer bound by the Sabbath. And again, I don't think that that conclusion is appropriate. The third is that folks will say that Jesus never passed along the command. Jesus never said you need to keep the Sabbath day. And that's true, but what that is missing, and hopefully what we tried to drive home the last 2 days, is that Jesus is a first century Jew living in first century Palestine. The concept of keeping the Sabbath is a given. It is not something that is negotiable. So it would be redundant for him to talk about keeping the Sabbath. The reason we don't have discussions about the Sabbath in terms of keeping it or not keeping it until the New Testament writings is because that's when it becomes a conflict. Because now you have Gentiles coming in who don't adhere to the Sabbath. And we have to decide, do they need to keep it or not? Okay. So Jesus being silent on it is not helpful. Right? He doesn't tell them not to circumcise. He doesn't tell them not to keep sacrifices. But those things are extensions of what Jesus accomplished. So let's look at Paul's arguments. Because again, let's turn over to Colossians 2. Because this is when ultimately this discussion becomes relevant. Because we have now Christ telling the apostles, you need to go out into all the world, to all ends of the earth, and bring in many. Go out into the highways, the hedges. Go out and find anyone you can to bring into this feast, because it is now a call to all, not just the sons of Abraham. And now, how do we reconcile the fact that we're bringing in a whole bunch of folks that do not have to keep the law of Moses legally and reconcile them with a bunch of individuals who their entire cultural, religious, not just their life, but their familial history is ingrained with keeping these things. So Colossians 2, let's look at what Paul's argument is. Let's begin at verse 13. And you who were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. He disarmed the rulers and authorities and put them to open shame by triumphing over them in him. And then jump down to verse 16. So here's what Jesus accomplished. He put aside sins. He took these legal demands and set them aside. He removed them. That makes us think about Paul's writings in Ephesians, right? Tanner was reading from Ephesians earlier. Later on about that uncircumcision, you were born uncircumcision without God, without hope and in the world. He goes on to talking about Jesus has now put aside that wall of partition between Jew and Greek and made them one, right? The legal demands, that wall of partition between us, it's been removed. But he says in verse 16, therefore, because of Christ's sacrifice, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink, or with regard to a festival, or a new moon, or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So here Paul lumps multiple other legal and ceremonial and calendar-based laws with the Sabbath. And Paul says all these things are a shadow, and they are to be done away with through the Christ. They are no longer legal absolutes that have to be held. Now let's turn over to Romans 14. This is going to be another passage. It doesn't specifically call it the Sabbath, but the message is the same. Romans 14, verse 5. One person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. While the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself, and none of us dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. For to this end, Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and of the living. So again, Paul's arguments are centered around maintaining peace and unity in this growing body of both Jew and Gentile. Again, the Jews would have maintained the Sabbath. They are the ones who esteemed one day better than the other. This was, in fact, something that was continually not just a practice in Paul's time, but I believe it's the book I think many of us have, When Jesus Became God, that history of the Nicene Council, that he makes an allusion that in the Middle East, lots of those Christian congregations at the time, that their deacons and their pastors were concerned because lots of their members would still go to the synagogue on Sabbath and then come over and go to church on Sunday. Right, so this was something that was ingrained culturally and was held for quite a long time. But this ultimately could be a source of conflict between the two, because Gentiles coming in not wanting to observe a law and the Jews wanting them to or seeing it would be. But again, what is tied to it is the absolutes. If a Gentile came in, wanted to observe the Sabbath, just like if we wanted to observe the Sabbath today, there's nothing wrong with that, right? You want to observe Passover, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's an absolute that God demands it, that he requires it, that it's part of honorable, required service to him. That's the issue. It's not a question of its benefit, it's a question of its requirement. So now let's look at some of the arguments used by those who say it is a legal requirement. It is an absolute. You do have to keep it. First, the argument that the Sabbath predates the law of Moses is from creation, and therefore Jesus did not need to remove it because it wasn't part of the law. Now, on the surface, this potentially has some merit to it. But if a principle or a concept predating the law of Moses means it's still in effect, what other principles and concepts were present prior to the law of Moses that we would say are not still in effect? Animal sacrifice, requirement of circumcision, Noah brings on the ark, clean and unclean. Okay? So there are multiple things that are present that we would say are no longer present. Now, the second limitation to this argument is that the Sabbath isn't a command until the law of Moses. That is when it is codified. There's no indication or record that the seventh day had lasting importance beyond the Garden of Eden. Again, there's some implication to it, and we'll look at that, but it didn't have necessary strong legal requirements to God's service. So let's turn over to Exodus 16, because we alluded to this earlier. This is going to be the discussion about the manna. This is, again, before the Jews come to Mount Sinai. Again, Mount Sinai and the law, the Ten Commandments, is Exodus 20. So here we are, Exodus 16. They've gone through the Red Sea. They're now in the wilderness. They're on their way to Sinai, and they're going to be given the manna. God says, I'm going to take care of the people. Exodus 16, verse 4. Then said the Lord unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. So Moses tells the people it won't appear on the Sabbath. And this indicates the idea of a seventh day or a holy day was somehow relatable. But there's a group of people that don't listen, as we talked about. And so the number of people that go out and do not listen, they go out and look for the manna and it's not there, implies it was not a strict law that they already held, or else there'd be no reason to tell the people, don't come out on Saturday because there's going to be no food. Well, if they already don't do anything on Saturday, they're not going to come out and look to collect food. So it implies that maybe they knew about it, but it wasn't a law previously. Now, you can look at some other lessons from this, and we're going to skip some of the other lessons for the purpose of time. But the other point that we want to take from this is if we said and we thought that the Sabbath was forever, it was something from the Garden of Eden, it was an eternal command that had to be kept. If that was the case, who should say it is a universal law that has to be kept? What other people would say it's a universal law? The Jews, right? They're the ones that say, hey, we follow the law of Moses, but everyone should follow the Sabbath. That is a commandment from the beginning. It's a divine command from the beginning. You have to keep it. But what do Jews think? Well, there's this thing called the Noahide laws. There's another term. Let's see if I got the other term. Seven laws of Noah. And what these are in Jewish writings. And what these are what Jews consider the requirements for a Gentile to observe to be considered righteous in the eyes of God. These are the universal principles that extend from Adam until now. The one exception that they will say that was added because of Noah is the last one about the last two about not eating live animals and about the courts. But what they do not include is the Sabbath. So you would argue that God's people, the ones who are most in tune to these things, that would say, if this was a universal principle from beginning that all mankind has to follow, they would say, everyone should be following this. But they do not recognize the Sabbath as something that Gentiles need to keep to be righteous. This is also, if you have the question, very much an aside, but when Jesus says, like, the Pharisees will travel over to the ends of the earth to make a disciple, and you're like, I've never met a Jew who really wants to make a disciple. This is now one of the reasons why it is very difficult to convert to Judaism, and why they actually almost discourage conversion, is because if you are a Gentile, this is all you have to do. If you're Jewish, you have to keep however many commandments there are, 300 something something commandments that you're supposed to keep. But if you stay a Gentile and you don't actually come under the bond of Judaism, it's actually easier for you. I had that conversation with an Orthodox professor of mine, which I thought was interesting. Next argument, that it is part of the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments are universal, they are forever, and they are not removed by the sacrifice of Christ. The argument here is that essentially the Ten Commandments are moral commandments. What Jesus removes are the ceremonial and legal commandments. Moral commandments are universal. A much bigger discussion is, can you actually divide the law that way? And would Jews actually, in the first century, when it was given at Sinai, I think they would see all of them as moral. That's a little bit of a distinction that we make now. But the question there is there a difference between these? And this is, again, you hate to make an argument from silence, but if we do look at the New Testament and say, what of the Ten Commandments were repeated and reinforced and reiterated, how does that breakdown look? And this is going to be a very busy slide, and I apologize because you're not going to be able to read it. But the intent is, here is all the verses and references that apply to the Ten Commandments in the New Testament that tell you you have to keep these things. And the big goose egg is a repetition on having to keep the Sabbath. And so ultimately, the idea that the Ten Commandments are somehow this special entity, I think they're important, they're vital, they're the first Ten Commandments God gives, but at the same time, and they're what he puts on tablets of stone, but at the same time, Jesus tells us what the two great commandments are. And then finally, and this I would say is perhaps, I would say the one that maybe has the most strength to it in my mind. And this is what is proposed by at least Adam Clark in his commentary. And that is the argument that types are only fulfilled, or types only go away once they are fulfilled. So circumcision goes away because Christ has come and shown it's really circumcision of the heart. Clean and unclean goes away because that was a teaching about people and individuals. Animal sacrifices go away because of Christ. Sabbath does not go away because it is points towards the kingdom. And so that's when it goes away. So that is Adams Clark's argument. Adam Clark, however, also says that Sunday is replaced Sabbath, and so his argument is that's why you should not do anything on Sunday for now and eternity, until the kingdom. The limitation to that is, what did Paul, there are a couple I think, but what did Paul tell us in Colossians? These things were a shadow. He says, this is one of the types that went away with the sacrifice of Christ. The other element, again, Jesus does not use the term Sabbath or rest specifically as applying to himself, but we think about some of the words that Brother Sam talked about. We think about peace, we think about rest, we think about unity, we think about fellowship. These lessons that are there in the Sabbath, are those things not fulfilled in Christ? So I think there is fulfillments to the type of the Sabbath and what Jesus has accomplished. All right, 16 minutes, home stretch. Now the question is, so we do not have to legally keep a 24-hour period of doing nothing. The law has said that has been accomplished and removed in Christ. The question is there still importance in our lives for the role of keeping sacred time? Yay? Nay? Yes. Yay. All right, great. Whole week hasn't been a waste. All right, so it has importance. So what does that look like, and what does that mean? How do we apply it to our lives? And this is, again, there's going to be lots of ways you can think about this in your own life. And it may be different for your phase of life. Okay? That's what we're talking about, is that, again, this is not absolutes. What I say, what I suggest is not legally binding by any way. What is this and what sacred time is going to look like for Brother Bill? It's probably going to look different than it does for Brother Sam. Right? It's probably going to look different for Sam's kids. Right? What stage of life you're in is going to look different. Okay? And that's fine. It's kind of like there are lots of these tools that we know that Jesus used that we find at different times in our lives may be beneficial. One of the things I think that kind of parallels this in some ways is a tool that we don't use that often and we don't talk about that often, but something like fasting, right? That's something that Jesus used, his disciples likely used, lots of faithful individuals throughout time have used, but it's not something you do all the time, but something that in its proper time, proper place, can have spiritual benefits, okay? So the first thing to think about is, did Jesus have benefit from practicing sacred or holy time? Yes. Okay. Not only did he keep the Sabbath, which we know as a practicing Jew, he would observe. What else do we have records of Jesus doing? Praying all night, withdrawing to himself alone. Even, strangely enough, the temptation in the wilderness, right? He's 40 days by himself. So Jesus shows that having this dedicated time is vital in our service to God. Okay? And this is, if you are interested in this kind of concept of first century concept of what discipleship looked like, John Mark Comer's book, Practicing the Way, has some good information on that. Those podcasts, the Ray Vanderland, he has a whole section on what first century discipleship looked like, as does Lois Tobberg's book. And those, I think, give a very good picture of how we're trying to model our lives after what Jesus did and what Jesus found acceptable. Again, as the perfect example, the things he did that were beneficial in his spiritual walk, we should look to as being tools for ourselves. Now, what is one of the great difficulties in our day and age? We've had multiple folks talk about it. I'm keeping my lecture time on it right now. I have three pieces of connection to the internet, connection to the world, connection to work, right in front of me, just to give this lecture. The world itself is always wanting our time. And what do so many of us, especially those of us that are working, those of us that have family, those of us that have kids, and not that those are the only demands of our time and our requirements, but how do all of us feel about how much free time we have in our lives?
Need more.
Need more, right? Is there anybody that feels like they need less time in their lives? But in our day and age, what do we have more of than any other period of time in society?
Time.
Right? I just went downstairs. Every day we've taken laundry down to the machine, right? I'm not walking out. Let's be honest. Mel's not walking out to a stream. I mean, if we're gonna be historically accurate, Mel's not walking out to a stream, taking the kids with her to go scrub things on a rock and hang it out to dry, you know, and disappearing all day and not being in any lectures. Okay? Technology has given us lots of extra time, but what have we done really good at doing with that? Sticking more stuff in it. Absolutely. And so one of the challenges we have is understanding how do we set aside and protect time for God and protect times for the divine, because that's required of us. Because otherwise, the world will take it all. Our wants, our desires will take it all, whether that is beneficial things, be it work. We heard a reference to hobbies and gardening, right? Every time something drops off our plate, do we say, oh great, now I have more time for the Word. I have more time for prayer. I have more time to call and check in on my brothers and sisters. Or do we say, now I can have that next home improvement project. I can have that next hobby. I can have that next thing, right? We all do that. Mel will tell you, I am very bad about doing that. I can always squeeze a little bit more in. And what this concept says is for our benefit, for our spiritual good, there has to be a separation. There has to be a pause that says, these things are not going to be a part of my life because I'm going to set aside time for God. And again, what it also reminds us is this idea that Adam and Eve from the garden, it says they were put in the garden to dress and keep it. And we looked at how that connected to Deuteronomy 5, that ultimately at the end of the day, we now are supposed to keep and protect this sacred time that we set aside for God. And that is going to help us in our mindset and how we think about our work the other 6 days. When we do have to go out, and because we do have to provide for our families, we do have to work, we do have to, you know, grow and develop. We are made in the image of God. There are lots of these things that are beneficial and positive. They are growth and achievement and accomplishment. There are things God wants us to do. But do we do them in the mindset of the Tower of Babel? Or do we do it in the mindset of to God's glory? Because ultimately, the world itself wants us to accumulate more, gather more, have more, want more. But what is the one thing that we cannot ever conquer, develop, rule over? No matter how hard man fights, no matter how hard man struggles, what can we not conquer? What can we not rule? Time. Time is God's alone. Time is part of the divine. I'd like to read a couple passages here from Rabbi Heschel's book. And I think he does a really good job of emphasizing why this set-aside time is important. All right. Quote, to set apart one day a week for freedom, a day on which we would not use the instruments which we have been so easily turned into weapons of destruction, a day for being with ourselves, a day of detachment from the vulgar, of independence of external obligations, a day on which we stop worshiping the idols of technical civilizations, a day on which we use no money, a day of armistice and the economic struggle with our fellow men and the forces of nature. Is there any institution that holds out a greater hope for man's progress than the Sabbath? The solution of mankind's most vexing problems will not be found in renouncing technical civilizations, but in attaining some degree of independence from it. And his argument is essentially this time, by setting aside time, it reorients our entire life. Okay? And it keeps the rest of man's desires, man's goals in check. So what does it look like in our lives? First, I'd say part of it is putting aside our ambitions for a time. Our work, our hobbies, our goals, our desires. And what was one of the things the Sabbath was supposed to teach them? Their dependence and reliance on God. Those worries that come from work, those worries that come from our financial situation. Reliance that comes from the stress that comes from all these things, it lets us step back and say, these are in God's control. Am I reliant on our Heavenly Father? As the rabbi put, independence from technical civilization. And I know lots of folks, they have times in their family where they say, we are going to have a dedicated time that is free of technology. And I think that is very beneficial. Melissa and I tried this one Saturday morning. It went over so-so. But it is hopefully something that we're going to try to incorporate more and more to make it a regular aspect of being separated and recognize our relationship to these devices. Also, we talked about the Sabbath and had holy time or dedicated time is a guardrails to what? Again, in the account of the golden calf, it's this guardrails to idolatry. What is our New Testament definition of idolatry from the Apostle Paul? Covetousness, right? Is that not what society is trying to encourage in all of us? Covetousness. Want more, need more. My life is empty without more. And it's also a recognition that those things, what we accomplish, what we gather, what we accumulate, what does it do for us? Does it change our hope of life eternal? Does it change our relationship with our Heavenly Father? No. But it is very easy during a uninterrupted week for that to be the mindset that we fall into. Again, a remembrance that you once were slaves in Egypt. Jesus healing on the Sabbath day. Service to others is not seen as work. Instead, service to others, the poor, the needy, the unfortunate, the marginalized, it is an indication that we are trying to show the kingdom and what that looks like, the freedom it brings in those individuals' lives. There is hope, there is a plan, there is a purpose, and here is some small picture of what that looks like. I would say many of us probably do volunteer activities and other community service things, but trying to focus those concepts and think about that service in these terms I think is helpful. We've been very lucky that we have a young sister in our ecclesia who has taken it upon herself that once a month the Denver Ecclesia has a organized activity that we are do as an ecclesia that is a service project. There's a shelter that is for women that are fleeing abusive relationships. And every time a new family comes in, they turn the whole room over, they paint it, bring in new furniture, new everything else, and you can take a room, and it's your responsibility to prepare it for that family. There's been food drives. There's been a community garden that raises food for the local homeless shelter. There are all kinds of activities that point us in that mindset of what ultimately the kingdom age will look like when these things are going to be resolved. In the garden, when God says that he walked in the cool of the day and he called, "Where are you, Adam?" We focus on Adam's response. I know that I historically focused on Adam's response. But what is God doing? We had, again, the reference to walking with God being, oftentimes we think about it in religious terms and moral terms. But what is God asking? What is he looking for? It's a good creation. If Adam and Eve have not partaken of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they can go walk with God. What is God walking with them? But to enjoy that creation, to show off the good world that he has made for them. So can sacred time or Sabbath be a time to enjoy God's good creation? Can it be a early cup of coffee sitting on our front porch for a sunrise or a sunset? Can it be camping? Can it be being out in God's creation? Can it be a walk in the park? Going to be going bird watching, right? There are all kinds of ways that we can enjoy God's good creation to recognize what he has provided and what he is offering his people. It is a time of community. As we've discussed, the festivals were all Sabbath events, when the entire congregation of the children of Israel would come together. So is our Sunday service a time of holy time? Yes. Our weeknight classes. But does it just have to be that? Can it be hymn sings? Can it be potlucks? Can it be just having folks come over to our house, in whether it is study or catch up, to contemplate the things that bind us in our hope. Again, we are not going to ignore the suffering of this world as the school of Shammai did. So if someone needs to talk about their difficulties, right, their struggles, their sorrows, their mourning, that is a time to do that as well. I think Jesus taught us that. Again, a time to focus on God, His Son, and His Word. Prayer, our readings, those things are vital and important. Again, in the first century Judaism, the one time you heard the law spoken and read was the Sabbath. That's why you went to synagogue, was to hear the Sabbath, the Torah, and the scrolls read. We have access to the Word now, right? People did not have their own individual scroll in their house. It stayed at the synagogue. We have that now. And so it can be a time of reading, a time of reflection. Again, during those quiet times, a time of contemplation and prayer. And most importantly, I think, and this will be our last point, as I apologize for running just a touch over, the most important thing is this has to be purposeful. That has to be the intent. It has to be a open and desired dedication of this time to set it aside for God. Because yes, we can do all kinds of great volunteer work. Yes, you can have all kinds of quiet time. Yes, you can have all kinds of time out in nature. You can go camping for 3 weeks out in the wilderness and say, isn't this beautiful? Look at all these things. I took all these great photos. But if it isn't time that is purposefully set aside to contemplating the things of God, contemplating His creation, contemplating His plan and purpose, and our relationship to it, if it isn't purposeful, then it's not going to have that same benefit. It's not going to shape us. It's not going to meld us. It's not going to direct us towards His kingdom. Again, back to our example of fasting. Lots of people fast for health reasons. But is that changing your spiritual relationship to God? The intent and why it is done is just as important as the act itself. And so that idea of purposefulness is important. Now we're going to read one last quote here, and then we'll end, because I know Al's getting a little antsy thinking, I got just as much material to get through, man. Let's go. If I said there are three things that the Sabbath represents, joy, holiness, and rest, which of those things would you apply to the Sabbath now? Which of those things would you apply to Sabbath in the future? Joy, holiness, rest. What would be now?
Rest.
Okay. Here's how Rabbi says it. Rabbi Herschel. The Sabbath is a reminder of the two worlds, and we'll end with this. This world and the world to come is an example of both worlds, for the Sabbath is joy, holiness, and rest. Joy is part of this world. Holiness and rest are something of the world to come. When he says that, this is not something, again, something onerous. This is a reminder that the Sabbath was made for man. This dedicated time, this holy time that we can set apart, it is a joy. It is God's gift. And it is a benefit for us in our service to Him. And we'll conclude there. Thank you very much.